analyzing the givens only took a few minutes. The rest of the day was spent making various preparations. How Archibald and I got others involved in that work and the minor adventures each of us had during the day would make for an amusing collection of anecdotes, but I have made the decision not to spell them out here because they are so trivial compared to what happened that evening. Before it was over, though, we had enlisted Emin, Triss, Barb, Carvel, Leo, and Simon, and had talked Sir Asquin into looking the other way while we made some temporary alterations to her endowment. The fourth Plurality of Worlds messel began normally. After a libation, soup was served. Barb and Emin went back to the kitchen. Not long after, Orhan was yanked. Triss followed him out. About a minute later, I felt a coded sequence of tugs on my rope, which informed me that things had gone according to plan in the kitchen. The stew that Orhan had been cooking had inadvertently been knocked over by clumsy Barb. Between that distraction and the racket that Triss and Emin had begun making with some pots and pans, Orhan would be unlikely to notice that sound was no longer coming out of the speaker. I nodded across the table to Archibald.
"Excuse me, Fra Javarn, but you forgot to bless your food," Archibald announced in a clear voice.
Conversation stopped. The messel had been unusually subdued to this point, as though all the Doines were trying to devise some way of restarting the dialogue while avoiding the awkward territory that Javarn had attempted to drag us into last night. Even in the rowdiest messel, though, any unasked-for statement from a servitor would have been shocking. Archibald's was doubly so because of what he had said. As long as everyone was speechless, he went on,
"I have been studying the beliefs and practices of the Matarites. They never take food without saying a prayer, which ends with a gesture. You have neither spoken the prayer nor made the gesture."
"What of it? I forgot," Javarn said.
Ignatha Forrell was giving Paphlagon a look that meant, "When are you going to throw the book at your servitor?" And indeed, Paphlagon now threw down his napkin and made as if to push his chair back. But Fra Jad reached out and clamped a hand on Paphlagon's arm.
"You usually forget," Archibald pointed out. "And if you like, I can list any number of other ways in which you and Orhan have imperfectly simulated the behavior of Matarites. Is it because you're not actually Matarites?"
Beneath the hood, Javarn's head moved. He was casting a glance at the door, not the one through which he and the other Doines had entered, but the one through which Orhan had left.
"Your minder can't hear us," I told him. "The microphone wire has been cut by an Eda friend of mine. The feed no longer goes out."
Still, Javarn remained frozen and silent. I nodded at Sir Carvel, who pulled aside a tapestry to reveal a shiny mesh woven of metal wires with which we had covered the wall. I stepped around toward Javarn, stuck a toe under the edge of the carpet, and flipped it up to reveal more of the same on the floor. Javarn took it all in.
"It is a fencing material used in animal husbandry," I explained, "obtainable in bulk extramuros. It is conductive, and it is connected to ground."
"What is the meaning of all this?" demanded Ignatha Forrell.
"We're in a sandbucker's basket," exclaimed Moira.
Her life as an extremely senior, semi-retired lorite probably didn't include many unexpected events, and so even something as mundane as discovering that she was surrounded by chicken wire seemed like quite an adventure. More than that, though, I believe she was pleased that the servitors had taken her exhortations to heart and gone out and done something that the Doines never would have dreamed of.
"It's a grounded mesh that prevents wireless signals from passing into or out of the room. It means we're informationally shielded from the rest of Arbre."
"In my world," said Javarn, "we call it a Faraday cage."
He stood up and shrugged his bolt off over his head, then tossed it to the floor. I was behind him and so could not see his face, only the looks of awe and astonishment on the faces of the others, the first Arbrans, with the possible exception of the Warden of Heaven, to gaze upon the face of a living alien. Judging from the back of his head and torso, I guessed he was of the same race as the dead woman who had come down in the probe. Beneath a sort of undershirt, a small device was attached to his skin with polytape. He reached under the garment, peeled it off, and threw it on the table, along with a snarl of wires.
"I am Jules Verne Durand of La Terre, the world you know as Antarct. Orhan is from the world of Ernud, which you have designated Panji. You had best get him inside the Faraday cage before...
Done,
said a voice from the door. Leo, who had just come in, cheerfully flushed.
We have him in a separate bucker's basket in the pantry. Simon found this on him.
And he held up another wireless body transmitter.
Well wrought, said Jules Verne Durand. But it has purchased you a few minutes only. Those who listen will grow suspicious at the loss of contact.
We have alerted Surela that it might become necessary to evacuate the consent,
Leo said. Good, said Jules Verne Durand.
For I am sorry to say that the ones of Ernud are a danger to you.
And to you of Laterre as well, it would seem, said Arcibald.
Since the Doynes were all too speechless to rejoin the conversation, Arcibald, who had had time to prepare, was doing his bit to keep things going.
It is true, said the Lateran. I will tell you quickly that those of Ernud and of Tro, which you call Diasp, are of similar mind, and hostile to those of Thos, which you call
Quator by process of elimination,
said Lodegear,